Well, I have mentioned it a couple times in our previous episodes, and I'm excited we finally get to talk about it today, and that is the understanding of how much we get turned down or can't be heard when we're up there playing our hearts out because we're trying to emulate recordings. So lots to it. Let's get started. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome in. My name is Stephen Reed. I'm the co-founder and part of the team here at Music and Ministry. We're a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping musicians and ministers do whatever it is that God's called you to do, and excited to be part of your journey here as we unpack some of the things that the Lord has shown us. And we're in this deep dive right now about how to not get turned down. And that happens all the time in big churches, at small churches, even at concerts. Sometimes you'll look up there and you're like, I cannot hear what it is that I'm seeing. And there's a lot of reasons why that is, and we've been going through some of those, but there is none bigger than the one that we are going to talk about today, which is the fact that we do almost everything we do in our worship world based on a recording. And you would say, well, yeah, Steve, that's what everybody does. But that system comes along with a lot of problems for various reasons. And one thing that we have to realize right away is understand is that the system that is used for recording, the tools, the people, the equipment, the order of things that are done, the time that it takes to do all of those things is completely different than what we do when we're talking about live music. And if I can give you an illustration, an example, it would be like comparing movies, and I've got holding up some DVDs here that I'm got at my personal collection for those of you that are listening via audio only. And just as a heads up, there's a video version of this on YouTube if you want to check it out, but you don't have to because sometimes you need to drive and listen instead of watch me. But recordings are a lot like movies. They take time, they take effort. You know, a movie like Monsters, Inc. took thousands of hours from hundreds of people working for years to make this movie. It wasn't all done in one moment. Now, we all kind of recognize, hey, this isn't real, this didn't really happen. But the problem that we sometimes run into when we realize, oh, a live performance of Monsters, Inc. would look very different. Well, first of all, these are animated characters and you would have to somehow create those. And I know that they have done that because I've been to various forms of Disneyland where they had people dressed up in characters and they kind of look like Sully and, you know, all the other monsters that are in here. But it's not exactly the same thing. And there sometimes will be the ice capades. And so, hey, let's adapt, which is kind of like a play. So you're taking an animated movie that took hundreds of people, thousands of hours over multiple years and saying, hey, let's reproduce this on ice in an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever it is that you get for your ice capade dollar. All right. Well, that takes a whole lot of skills and it's not going to be exactly the same. There's things that you just can't do. You can't blow up a lab. You can't have all these other things happen because it's a virtual world and it's something that we just created. So in the same way, when we take a live recording or any kind of worship recording, we have to then recognize, okay, how is that different from what it is that we would be doing live? And the problem that we sometimes run into is that we are told, and this is the deception part that we were talking in our list of six reasons why you won't get further ahead, is that we are told that the recording is live, when in fact it is never live and has not been live. And that's a whole thing that we can talk about as well. But we make the assumption that what it sounds on the recording is what it was like sitting in the room. And that is not true. Even if it was completely live, that they just pushed record on the soundboard and it went in, it's a different system. It's just done differently. So in the same way that a movie is also watched in a theater in front of people, and a play is watched in front of people in a theater, there's just different rules and different things that you have to do to adapt. And so that's a huge key word that we're going to discuss. If I was taking notes, I would write that down. How do we adapt a recording for a live performance? And I'm going to take you through some of those things today on the bass guitar, because of all of the instruments, that's one of the things that gets changed the most between a recording and a live part of it. All right, so the first thing you just got to know, and I've said it multiple times, and I'm not going to belabor this, but recordings aren't real, all right? They're not live. They've never been live. And I'm just casually saying that and then putting a smile on my face and saying, yeah, let's move on, all right? That's a massive revelation that caused me a significant amount of like mental conflict and confusion, just because you go through these stages of like, you find it out and then there's an initial denial. You're like, there's no way that all of the different churches are faking this and that nobody's ever told us that, hey, this isn't real. And you're like, yes, it is. And then you find out, oh yeah, that's actually true. And so then there's a level of shock. And then there's usually some like disbelief and then like hurt feelings and upset. And you go through, at least I went through and know many people that have, go through this like just phase of being disillusioned and like being angry even. And I sometimes still get some of that, because you're just like, why would you do this? I like believed you. I tried to follow you. I trusted you. And the whole while you were faking it. But what I've gotten to, and what I'm kind of like moving on past, is like, at the same time, God still moves through those things. And for better or worse, it's the best form of visual and like worship communication that we have. All right. So for me, like, I know it's fake. And so then I don't have that unfounded expectation. Now, part of the reason why it's fake is because we like it to be faked. And I know that's going to seem really weird, because I'm laying all these stuff on you, but people like live albums. They want the illusion of live. And there's several holidays that I could point out where people put pictures of animals and or creatures or mythological things. And you're like, oh yeah, this is who we're celebrating during this holiday. And those things have a certain level of, you know, believability attached to them. We'll just say that, in case I've got some sensitive ears and don't want to ruin your family traditions. But we, in the same way, people like live albums. There have been some churches that put out studio albums and then they don't sell as well and people don't receive them. And I've even heard people say like, I just missed, you know, I want it to be live. And it's like, yeah, the other ones weren't live either. They just added crowd noise. And so again, I don't want to belabor this, but I also point out, like, the thing that we think that we're chasing that's going to work, we're like, no, I've seen it work, is a much like Star Wars here, where Yoda is going to come to the rescue with his lightsaber. It's not happening. It's not real. It was never real. All right. And so then we have in some ways deceived ourselves, but we've also been deceived. And so I just say that to say, there's a lot of things that we're doing as worship leaders that is trying to copy things that were never real, that it wasn't done that way. The results are often faked, in the sense that they have a group of people that they sit in front, that they ask them like, hey, raise your hands. And basically they're actors. And like, if you don't know that, again, like an actor on a movie, like those aren't real people, they're actors. They're being told to do that. And we think, well, if I do it like that, we'll get the results that they got. And that's not true, because they didn't even get the results that they got. They faked those results. All right, so we're gonna let that go. Hopefully you're gonna get over it real quick and we'll be able to move through. But again, if we're making choices and creating systems of how we're gonna do things based on things that are not true, then we end up chasing these ghosts, and it has a lot of collateral damage, in the sense of a lot of people get turned off. A lot of people are just like working really hard to not get what it is that they were hoping to get. All right, so we want you to get what you want to get and do what it is that you're supposed to do, and have the people that you're included in your team actually contributing to your team. All right, so we're going to let that go. And let's just, even if it was 100% accurate, yes, they pushed record and that's what it was, there's still some problems. And these are massive, massive problems that you're going to have to learn how to adapt and get past. So the first one is going to be the idea that most recordings are made by machines, all right? And so, yes, a human most likely played some portion of that, but all those things are then fixed meticulously, all right? And so for those of you that have not spent much time in recording, it is unbelievable the level of detail that we use machines to fix every single little thing. Certainly we auto-tune all of the voices, and it's not even auto-tune. Auto-tune's a filter that will just kind of like grab it as it comes. We use another program called Melodyne, or if you're using the proprietary one that came in your DAW, like Logic or whatever, it would be FlexTime Pitch. You go in and you can, syllable by syllable, note by note, control whether or not it's sharp, flat, and then you can raise it up. You can do this pitch drift thing. You can turn down the volume. You can increase the volume. You can make it, you can, if they didn't sing the note that you liked, you can change it to a different note, and you would never be able to tell the difference. All right. And so there is some measure of pitch correction that is available in a live scenario, but you can't get that kind of pitch correction live. It has to be done later. And it is done for every single instrument. There's also a thing called quantization that makes it everything then time aligned. So if you're playing a little bit late or a little bit ahead, and humans do that because we're not perfect machines, we go in later and we fix all of those things to be as close as we want them to be. And so they'll be in line. Or if we want them, sometimes we'll just move a little bit out of line just because we like how that sounds. Just like the animators did on Monsters, Inc. or Monsters University, whichever one you prefer, or both, you know. Every single detail is meticulously thought about, had a meeting about, and then it's controlled. That's how recordings are. Even though they said they were live, and even if they did play them live, they will go back later and make all of those fixes. So when you are adapting, or we would say reorchestrating, is the fancy music term, is you have to factor in humans. And yes, there are some machines that we can pull on and help, some things in the soundboard, some filters and other things, but they're not the same machines and not the same tools that we can use when we're doing our recordings. And so knowing what's available to us will then change who we have on our team. It will change how we play, the parts that we're assigning them to play, and the expectation of how much is somebody going to be heard or not going to be heard. It is a massive deal, and I wish we had so much more time to go into it over everything, but again, I'm gonna jump here on the bass in just a minute. But the last thing that we then have to talk about, and this is monumental, is that we're not talking about the same kind of sound systems. All right, so your sound system at a movie theater is going to be these days in a system called Atmos, which is surround sound, and it's gonna have like 9 to 11 speakers, some on the ceiling, some around you and back and beneath you. All right, now if you go to a play, there's potentially going to be no sound system. Hey, remember those days where you just went and people talked louder and then you couldn't ever turn your back to the people in the audience because you had to be forward and project your voice. And so if you turned your back, nobody could hear you, nobody could see your face. Well, that's not how it works in a movie. You can do that all the time. Yeah, because it's a movie and there's multiple camera angles and you can switch back and forth and you can do multiple takes and all of these different tools and tricks. But in our live setting, most of the time, most sound systems are created to have an even mono distribution of sound. All right, so recordings are not made in mono anymore. They hasn't done that for a long time, ever since we created stereo recordings, because stereo is better, quote unquote, I'm doing the little finger quote unquotes, as long as you're in the middle. All right, so we're talking about different sound systems. So if you're watching a movie, you make it to where you're in the middle of the sound system, all right? And sometimes we watch movies in stereo, sometimes we watch them in surround sound, sometimes we watch them with headphones, and sometimes we're watching them on our phone, which is essentially mono because of their tiny little speakers, all right? But your sound system will either be in stereo, unless you got some super fancy surround sound system at your church, which good on you, but it will either be in stereo, but most sound systems are designed to be in mono sound because most rooms are not conducive to having both speakers and the people be in the middle of both of those speakers. So I've been to plenty of churches and you might be even saying right now, hey Steve, yeah, our sound system's in stereo. But my question is to you, are you creating stereo field? But if you sit on one side of the congregation and somebody else sits on the other, then this side's gonna hear this guitar player and this singer, but they're not gonna be able to hear that singer and this other acoustic player, whatever it would happen to be, because they're over there. And so if you can't hear that other speaker because it's too far or the speaker's not throwing sound your way, well, then you end up having a terrible mix, all right? And so I've gone to churches where they mixed in stereo, I've gone to concerts where they mixed in stereo, and I just had to finally learn that stuff really bothers me. I'm like, your mix is awful. And again, these are named churches that I could tell you who they were and you would be like, oh, I've listened to their album. I like them. I could name some of the leaders that are on that team. And I'm telling you, where I sat, the mix was awful because they were trying to do stereo in an environment that was not conducive for stereo. And so it's a big debated topic amongst many sound people, whether or not we should mix in mono. And again, your sound system, depending on the size of the room, the shape of your room, and we'll get into this on another time, most churches should be in mono, which meaning there's an even distribution of sound going to each location so that it sounds roughly the same in each spot. Now, I then have learned, like, whatever I do, try to sit next to the sound person because that's where it's most likely going to sound the best. But again, that's not true and not a possibility for everybody that's in your church. So the question then becomes, are you using a mono sound system, which most people should, and even if you don't, that's fine. You can do whatever it is that you want to do. But if you're using a stereo sound system, there are completely different systems, different rules, and you would orchestrate, meaning you would have different musicians, you would play different parts based on whether or not you were in stereo and then balancing out those stereo because it's a significantly wider amount of space to fill versus a mono sound where all of those signals are then going to be on top of each other coming out the same, all right? And I wish we could spend so much more time there, but I think it would be more helpful if I grabbed my bass guitar and we started talking through some of these things, giving you a practical example. All right, it's over there. All right, well, I'm here with my bass guitar. Well, actually, this is my son's bass guitar because he is our family bass player, and I just use his until he moves out, and then I'll have to buy my own, all right? But I play bass sometimes at different churches and go to, you know, churches where you see bass players. And if any instrument is affected the most about the differences between recordings and live sound, it's going to be the bass guitar. And for lots of the reasons that I've already said, but let's just walk you through that, all right? So on recording, bass sounds are very different, and they're designed for your average consumer electronics. And so most of the time, you're going to be listening to music on maybe your computer, maybe you'll be listening to it on your iPhone, maybe you'll be listening to it on headphones, but very rarely do people have a gigantic sound system like you would have at a church or a hall or wherever it is that it is that you're meeting. Those kind of sound systems are generally reserved for large meeting spaces. And so if you have a subwoofer, it's unlikely that you have a 22-inch huge gigantic subwoofer that costs $1,000 a piece powered by all of these amps. I mean, if you do, take a picture and post it. We'd love to all see it, all right? But those recordings are, everything about them is designed to sound good on the places where it's listened to. Now, when we start talking about live music, and especially in the bass, bass sound becomes super important because in order to fill the hall with the amount of sound that's going to sound right, live sound usually has a lot more bass. And so that's true of the bass guitar, but it's also true of the kick drum. And if you've ever been to a big concert, what everybody always says is, man, I like could feel the kick drum like beating my chest on the inside, right? And like that's just how it is at live events and at big events, right? So depending on the size of your church, most of the time you're going to need to turn the bass up, all right? So that's not a problem. Bass players get excited about that, except for there are some other problems, all right? Part of that is that the sound that you get on the recording is not what you want for the live setting. And so I've prepared a few samples here. I'm gonna push play and you can hear, and this may be shocking, I've just recently learned this a couple years ago in going through and listening, there's something crazy that happens on almost every single recording. So let's take a listen. All right, this popular song. All right, let's try another popular song and see if you can hear the similarities. All right, did you notice what it is? All right, now some of you, maybe if you're listening on your iPhone speakers, may not even hear much of that low end anyway, but almost every bass sound on recordings is distorted. And I was like, how long have I played the bass? How long have I been a part of music and did not realize that that's what people are doing? And I would tell you to go and check it out. You can go to multi-tracks and listen to each of the tracks and listen kind of gives you a little sample of what's on each recording. And I have yet to find one that's a modern recent recording that is not distorted. But yet, how many bass players do you know have a distortion pedal on their effects rack? And the answer is almost none. Like we all like this really clean tone, sound this. And but that's not what they're doing. And so from an ignorant standpoint, right, we're just like, oh, I didn't realize that's how it worked. But if you were to do that in a live setting, you might get turned down even faster, all right? Now, how would you do that? You would have one of these, little distortion pedal. There's nothing fancy about this one. This is like the cheapest Boss pedal. It's the orange one, the mega distortion. But sometimes, if you're looking to replicate what's on the recording, well, this is something that you would need, some form of a distortion pedal, because they're all distorted at some level, all right? When you're there listening, you will also find that sometimes, and more recently, almost all the time, there's going to be something called the synth bass. And you're like, oh, well, there's two bass players? Yeah, on almost every recording, there's two bass sounds that are coming together, all right? Now, what's interesting is that those are not separate parts. It's usually just the main bass part run through some sort of synth filter. And if you were doing it live, we bought one of these for our son. It is a synth bass pedal. I don't even know if this one particular one's available anymore, but it basically takes the part that the bass player played and runs it through some sort of crazy filter that gives it some sort of warbly sound that at some level sounds good, all right? But you will notice that songs that you wouldn't think, oh, that's not really that electronic type of a song, but yet it will have it in it, all right? So if you want to sound like the recording, guess what you need to do? You probably need to get some sort of a fuzz pedal or a distortion pedal and get some sort of synth pedal and start replicating that. And so here's an example of that. This is a very famous song. All right, so here's what it sounds like, just the bass part. And this one's not quite as distorted. But then let's switch over to the synth sound. Let's go back and forth. Isn't that crazy? And you might be like, oh, I can play that. That's not too complicated. Bass isn't that hard to play. And so we could make all the sounds. So first of all, we're not even making the sounds out on the recording. All right, so that's an interesting issue. The next one is then, all right, let's learn that part. And there's multiple ways that you can learn that part. Like say you went to, maybe you can just hear it. Some people can hear it. My son can just hear it by listening to the recordings. Oh yeah, this is what they're doing. They're playing and he can play and it's no problem. I'm not that cool. So I have to go and find some more information. So I will sometimes will try and listen to like a multi-track if I have access to them. And so then I will listen to the whole thing and I can kind of get a sense of like, oh, they're out during the first verse, which is pretty typical. Then they're playing whole notes. Then they're going to follow the kick drum pattern for the next chorus. Then they're going to play this more complicated pattern through the bridge. And then when they get back to the chorus, it'll be all the fancy stuff. Now, sometimes you can get a break. The churches that put out that album will sometimes have some sort of a run-through, or some nice person who has the skill of being able to hear it and know what to play will then make a video. And so if you're looking for, you know, hey, you want to learn this Elevation song, you can type in this song by Elevation bass playthrough, and you will come up with some videos that may or may not be accurate. Sometimes it's actually by, you know, that group. Elevation makes different videos. And so you can watch them play the part as they made it on the recording. Now, sometimes those sounds will be accurate to the recording. Most of the times those will not include that synth sound, but it at least gives you an idea of what to do. All right, so we're trying to replicate at this moment still. Now, you can also subscribe to some different services. I've subscribed to worshipartistry.com at some different points. They don't pay me to say this, but I recommend them to a lot of different people, where they will teach you the bass part, and they will actually sometimes have the tablature there where you can actually read the notes, print it out like in sheet music, and that can be very helpful. Now, what they are teaching you to do is to play it exactly like the recording, and what's gonna happen is you're gonna come into that live venue, you're gonna play it exactly like the recording, and even if you brought your fuzz pedal and your synth pedal, guess what's gonna happen to you? You're gonna get turned down. Now, not all of you, because as I said before, live sound requires a lot of bass. And so they want that bass, but there's some problems that are happening with our systems that are causing them to say, well, I want the low end, but the top end's causing all kinds of problems with these other things. And because we're humans and because it's a different system, we're listening in a different way, then they go and they do what I call lopping off the top, all right? And so there's a way through technology to split the signal to where only the low part of the sound is then pushed through the speakers and the top part is completely turned off. And I cannot tell you how many people I have seen concerts I've been to, big names, people that if I said their names, you would be like, oh my gosh, that's one of the best bass players I've ever seen. They're completely turned off or mostly turned off. Why? Because they're playing what was on the recording And a lot of times bass players get a little bored because the parts aren't quite as fun, and so they'll add something in, which that's on you. Because if you play something that wasn't doesn't work, which we're all guilty of, all right, I do it too, you'll get turned down for a different reason. But these are people who are playing exactly the right thing, but it's the wrong system. They're playing it exactly right for a recording, but this isn't a recording. This is a live thing, and so then we have to then adapt or reorchestrate or modify, whatever word you want to throw in there, for humans, meaning that we don't have machines that are going to time align all of our beats and rhythms. And we also have to do it for whichever kind of sound system that we have. So one thing, and the reason why bass players get lopped off, is they play too much rhythm. Now, this is going to be true for quite a few different instruments, is because suddenly there's too much rhythm, because when we don't have the computer to time align our signals, then we start to notice, oh, we're not all quite together. Now, if you listen to the recording and you go through all of these different tracks, and you'll be listening about, they're playing the rhythm, they're playing the rhythm, this other instrument's playing the rhythm, this person's playing the exact same rhythm on this other side. And in the recording, what will happen, that will be panned to the left, the other one will be panned to the right, and it makes this really cool wide sound that is really great as long as you're in the middle, and provided that you can time align those things with our quantization. All right, now that's not available to us in our live human element. So then when we're playing this song live, if I, as the bass player, am just slightly off of the drummer, well, a little bit of that's fine, but then the guitar player is just a little bit off. Oh, and the keyboard player is just a little bit off. Oh, and this other person is just a little bit off. And then all of a sudden we get this chaos, this like myriad of where is the rhythm? And that's not something that we want to hear or like to hear, and it just really muddies up the middle sound of it, because now there is no right and left. We can't put some of it over here and that over there. It's all coming down the same spot, all right? So a lot of the rhythm information that I'm getting when I'm plucking, the sound of that pluck is gonna come up way higher in the range of sound. It's up near where the voices are. And so I don't wanna hear the sound of pluck. I just wanna hear the boom of the sound vibrating. And so what happens is sound people are going to do it one of two ways. They're going to either apply what's called a low pass filter. Sometimes it's called to as a high cut. Either way, it does the same thing. But they'll just take the EQ and slam it all the way down. I mean, like way lower than you would possibly think. And so all you get, and you can't hear the pluck anymore, you just get. And so I can't tell you how many times I've watched bass players doing all this stuff, and you can watch their fingers are moving, and they're just plucking their hearts out, and then all you can hear is, and their fingers are moving, but it's not making its way out, right? It's because they're playing too much rhythm, and we have that rhythm being supplied by somebody else, and so we need to start cutting out rhythm. And if I were to tell you, and that's one of the keys of adapting recordings to live, is you have to eliminate a significant portion of the rhythm. Why? Because we're humans, and because we're in this mono environment where I can't separate and I can't gain clarity based on putting it over here to one side and this coming out of that speaker, because then when I'm in the main area, that's not going to work. It's not going to sound right. So we have to eliminate that rhythm. So we can do some different things with that, all right? So if we know as a bass player, hey, my sound's gonna get completely lopped off, why would I keep playing all of this fancy stuff? Because it's only for my enjoyment and anyone else in the band who's listening to me. Everybody else is not hearing. And I've been at major churches, again, where even that part of the sound of the bass is not being heard. Why? Because the keyboard player is also playing our notes, right? And that is the left pinky of every piano player is like your worst enemy when it comes to the bass. Why? Because they often play your note. Now, not the person, not the whole person. I'm just talking about the pinky, all right? I don't know what the Bible says about not liking somebody's pinky, but you're supposed to love your fellow man, all right? And it applies to women, but their pinky, can you hate their pinky? That's a philosophical conversation for another time. But if they're playing your note, again, in a mono environment, that causes major problems, whereas in a stereo environment, that wouldn't be an issue because pianos are often off to one side, either completely over on the left side, or they'll be split left and right, and the bass is almost always in the middle of a stereo field. I'm talking about panning for those of you that don't know that. Just when you listen with your headphones in, you'll notice some instruments are on this side and some instruments are on that side. And then by left and right, for those of you that are listening at home or wherever it is that you're listening to this podcast. So when all of those things get put into the middle, all of a sudden, now you can't hear it because they're doing the exact same thing. And that is another huge key of orchestrating or reorchestrating or adapting our recorded sound to live sound is we can't play the same notes anymore because we don't have these other tools available to us. So we have to divide out who's playing what notes and not have people duplicating. So recording has a ton of duplicated rhythm and a ton of duplicated notes, whereas in our live, we can't have duplicated rhythm or very limited duplicated rhythm and very limited duplicated notes, all right? So for you bass players who are just like, oh, I wonder if I'm getting lopped off, there's a few ways that you would not know it, all right? So if they did the method that I described earlier, putting on that high cut or low pass filter, you would probably be able to hear it in your headphones, assuming you were listening to the same mix. Now, if you have a separate monitoring system or you're dealing with maybe some of the P16s, you wouldn't be able to tell. But the other way that it can be done is that they will send just the bass through the subwoofers. And those are those gigantic speakers that are usually on the ground. Sometimes they're flying in high, but they're the big ones, all right? So they're not gonna send that signal to the main speakers. They're only sending it to the subspeakers. Now, it'll be EQ'd, and it'll sound right when you're listening in your headphones. Coming back to you, there'll be no changes. But you'll just have to know that anything over 80 hertz, which is pretty low, 100 hertz if you've got it, your system dialed in a little higher, that's just the low sounds are going through the speakers. And then all of the plucking that you're doing, and I had a friend that we talked to recently, he asked me after one time that I went to their church, he's like, did you hear that thing? Did you like how I was using the pick there? And I was like, nah, dude, we cannot hear anything that you're doing besides, all right? So he got a funny look on his face. It's part of the reason why we're doing these recordings is because he's like, you have to let people know, all right? Because if that's how it is, don't spend the time to learn all of these crazy parts when none of it matters, all right? If all they want from you is whole notes, then just play the whole notes, all right? Or quarters or whatever, but the rhythm thing is not good, all right? So if you play bass this week, you have to go to your sound person. Be kind, don't come angry because you may get a weird answer. You just have to ask, hey, can you show me what you're doing with my bass signal? Just because I want to make sure that I'm playing stuff that's going to work right for you, all right? Because that person is the gatekeeper. They're the ones that's saying whether or not you get to actually be on the team or not, because nobody else is going to know because they're all listening in it, headphones too, right? So if they have it to where they're sent, and you can ask them, are you just sending it to the subs independently or ask it to see the EQ graph? And if it's way cut over, you're like, yep, that's how it goes. All right. I ask every time I play bass, I ask the sound person these questions. Hey, what are you going to do with the bass so I can know how to change what it is that I'm doing? All right. And then from there, then I ask them after each song, I would say like, hey, is that working? Do you need less rhythm from me? I can give you more. I can give it simpler. And then most of them are so shocked that I actually talk to them that they don't know quite what to say, but I will actually go up afterwards and ask them again. I'm like, hey, you know, just let me know because I, you know, want to make sure that I'm giving you what you need to make it sound good. So again, if it's lopped off, then I'm just going to be playing whole notes and playing low, and I'm not going to be using a pick. I want less rhythm, so I'll use the pads of my fingers, or would potentially, if I used a pick, I would get one of those felt ones that are real thick that don't last super long, but just so that I'm not wasting my time, all right? And if you're that kind of a church or building or whatever it is that you have is conducive to just having that low end, then you can look for different kinds of bass players. Because if you have a bass player that's super talented and can do all those other things, they're not going to want to keep it simple. And so they're just going to be bored. So you might as well find somebody who's just beginning how to play, learning how to play bass and say, hey, play to the best of your ability, but play only this. All right. So that's a lot of information for you to tackle, and I know that that can be a big shock, and I just keep saying all these big and shocking things and expecting you to get over it and move on, but these are things how you fix them, all right? So can we free up room for the bass by having less other rhythm? Absolutely. So we can not have the guitars play as much rhythm. If we want the bass guitar to carry the rhythm and to keep those plucks in, then we have to work on, okay, bass player, you can't just be plucking all the time. And then guitar player, hey, here you're gonna play whole notes. And we're like, well, that's not what it is on the recording. It's like, yeah, because recordings are its own different thing. And it would be like going up in your play and you say you were doing, you know, Beauty and the Beast, and you're saying like, all right, well, this is the part where I light this person on fire. And you're like, yeah, that was an animated drawing where they jumped off of this thing and they fell and it was seemingly they were fine. Like, we're not gonna do that here at the, you know, our middle school play or whatever it would happen to be, all right? So just recognize those things are not the same thing. And the more that you learn about it, the more that you understand those, what those pieces of equipment are doing that we don't have in our live setting, it will alter how you play and you can keep yourself in the mix more. But from the get-go, if you don't know that recordings are different than live and operate by a different system, you're gonna make a ton of mistakes that will cause good musicians, people who think that they're doing the right thing, to play the wrong part at the wrong time with the wrong sound because it's just a different system. All right, more unpacking of all of these things and items and issues in the weeks to come. If you have any questions, drop them in the comments or whatever it happened to be. But until then, the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face to shine upon you and give you peace. All right, I just blessed you there in the name of Jesus. All right, here we go. Next time.